it didn't take the ministry long to make up their minds. The source of the infection was almost certainly some imported meat which Mr. Duggleby hadn't boiled properly with his swill. The disease was confirmed, and a 15-mile radius standstill order was imposed. I disinfected myself and my car and went home. I undressed, my clothes were taken away for fumigation, and I climbed into a hot antiseptic bath. Lying there in the steam, I pondered on what might have been. If I had failed to spot the disease, I would have gone merrily on my way, spreading destruction and havoc. I always washed my boots before leaving a farm, but how about those little pigs nibbling around the hem of my long coat? How about my syringe, even my thermometer? My next call was to have been to Terence Bailey's pedigree herd of dairy shorthorns. 200 peerless cows, a strain built up over generations. Foreigners came from all over the world to buy them, and I could have been the cause of their annihilation. And then there was Mr. Duggleby himself. I could picture him rattling around the farms in his coal wagon. He would have done his bit of spreading, too. And, like as not, he would have taken a few store pigs to the auction mart this week, sending the deadly contagion all over Yorkshire and beyond. It was easy to see how a major outbreak could have started. A disaster of national importance costing millions. If I hadn't been sweating already, I would have started now at the very thought of it. I would have joined the unhappy band of practitioners who had missed foot and mouth. I knew of some of these people, and my heart bled for them. It could happen so easily. Busy men trying to examine kicking, struggling animals in dark buildings with perhaps part of their mind on the list of calls ahead. And the other hazards. The total unexpectedness. The atypical cases. Various distractions. My distraction had been cricket, and it had nearly caused my downfall. But I had escaped, and, huddling lower in the hot water, I said a silent prayer of thanks. Later, with a complete change of clothes and instruments, I continued on my rounds, and as I stood in Tenants Bailey's long byre, I realized my luck again. The long rows of beautiful animals, meticulously groomed, firm high udders pushing between their hocks, delicate heads, fine legs, deep in straw. They were a picture of bovine perfection, and quite irreplaceable. Once foot and mouth is confirmed in a district, there is a tense period of waiting. Farmers, veterinary surgeons, and most of all, ministry officials are on the rack, wondering if there has been any dissemination before diagnosis, bracing themselves against the telephone message which could herald the raging spread which they dreaded, and which would tear their lives apart. To the city dwellers, a big foot-and-mouth outbreak is something remote which they read about in the newspapers. To the country folk, it means the transformation of the quiet farms and fields into charnel houses and funeral pyres. It means heartbreak and ruin. We waited in Derby, and as the days passed and no frightening news of lame or salivating animals came over the wires, it seemed that the Duggleby episode was what we hoped. An isolated case caused by a few shreds of imported meat. I almost bathed in disinfectant on every farm, sloshing a strong solution of Lysol over my boots and protective clothing so that my car reeked of the stuff, and I caused wrinkled noses when I entered a shop, the post office, the bank. After nearly 2 weeks, I had begun to feel reasonably safe, but when I had a call from the famous Bailey farm, I felt a twinge of apprehension. It was Terence Bailey himself. "Will you come and see one of me cows, Mr. Harriet? She's got blisters on one of her teats." "Blisters?" My heart went bump. "Is she slavering? Is she lame?" "Nay, nay, she just has these nasty blisters. Seems to have fluid in them." I was breathless as I put down the receiver. One nasty blister would be enough. It sometimes started like that in cows. I almost ran out to my car, and on the journey my mind beat about like a trapped bird. Bailey's was the farm I had visited straight from Duggleby's. Could I possibly have carried it there? But the change of clothes, the bath, the fresh thermometer, and instruments, what more could I do? How about my car wheels? Well, I had disinfected them, too. I couldn't possibly be blamed, but... It was Mr. Bailey's wife who met me. "I noticed this cow when I was milking this morning, Mr. Elliot." The herd was still hand-milked, and in the hard-working family tradition, Mrs. Bailey did her stint night and morning with her husband and the farm men. As soon as I got hold of the teats, I could see the cow was uneasy, she continued. Then I saw there were lots of little blisters, and one big one. I managed to milk her, and most of the little blisters burst, but the big one's still there. I bent and peered anxiously at the udder. It was, as she said, lots of small ruptured vesicles and one large one, intact and fluctuating. It was all horribly evocative, and without speaking, I moved along, grasped the cow's nose, and pulled her head round. I prized the mouth open and stared desperately at lips, cheek, and dental pad. I think I would have fainted if I'd found anything in there, but it was all clean and normal. I lifted each forefoot in turn and scrubbed out the clefts with soap and water. Nothing. I tied a rope round the hind leg, threw it over a beam, and with the help of one of the men, pulled the foot up. More scrubbing and searching without success, then the same with the other hind foot. When I finished, I was perspiring, but no further forward. I took the temperature and found it slightly elevated, then I walked up and down the byre.